And then people tend to sometimes keep children away from funerals because they don't want to upset them. But how will children ever learn about death?
This is a Baby Brunch podcast.
The Curaprox teething ring with integrated training toothbrush helps your child prepare for the day they start brushing their teeth. The Curaprox teething ring also promotes the development of sensory and motor skills. Join the Curaprox movement. Let's celebrate a billion healthy smiles, which will result in a billion healthy bodies and minds, making oral health contagious.
This podcast is supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. The range of Epimax Baby and Junior Gentle All-Purpose Emollient Moisturizers is an all-day, everyday favorite for babies and children. Give your child a good start to every day by nourishing and protecting their skin with Epimax.
So today we're talking about death. And we really looked for the best possible person who can help us unpack this episode, which is preparing for the departure. And we found a lady called Sonia Smith. She is from Sonia Smith Elite Funeral Group. And Sonia, the reason why I chose you is because a friend of mine lost her mum. And because it was terribly sad, she said, you know what, Sonia took good care of me and they really helped me. But you don't just send people off. Tell my listeners what you do during the day and how you actually take care of the living.
Oh, thank you, Ilana. It's such a privilege to be here. They call me the flying undertaker because I commute between provinces and I do many training sessions. I've just returned from a care for the carer where I focus on care workers because, you know, when we look at the environment of the older people, we normally focus on the matrons and the managers and the nursing staff, but we forget about the carers who have this most unthankful task of washing and feeding and changing diapers. So I speak to them about what they like about their job and what's not so nice and how do we handle that. And obviously what comes out is losing a patient.
What's it like working with the living and working with those who are leaving us?
In life, there is no greater mystery than death. And for me, it's just to be there for someone who needs me in their darkest hour. And to bring in a bit of color in this stock industry, it's always been very much male-dominated. Mm-hmm. It's always been black and white and gray. And I thought to myself, there must be another way of doing this. Make it soft. They call me the undertaker with velvet gloves. Mm-hmm. Just make it special. Make it memorable.
Why does it feel easier to plan a birth? You know, when we plan a birth, it's exciting, even though we have never met the person we are birthing. Why is it so hard for us to even think of the notion of a passing? Because we need to prepare for it.
That's one of the training sessions that I present at maternity wards. If you can picture this, there's joy, there's new beginnings, there's positive emotions, and then all of a sudden something goes wrong and we have a stillbirth. And now in this environment of joy, the nursing staff must switch into empathy and compassion mode. So yeah, the one thing is definitely the difference is the positive emotions when it comes to a birth. You know, when you will know you're also a mother, but that bond between a mother and an unborn child, it starts with a thought. I want to have a baby. We want to have a baby. And then there's this positive pregnancy test. There's the ultrasounds where you can actually visualize what your baby's features will look like. There's getting the baby room being prepared. And normally the father is involved there. And then, then the grandparents, everybody is so looking forward. And with a funeral, it's more reactive. You didn't plan for this because nobody knows. Death does not make an appointment. So it's very, very difficult. Unless somebody has been diagnosed with a terminal illness, then we talk about anticipatory grief. But besides that, I think when you are having a baby, you also have a lot of support. Health practitioners, family, everybody's looking forward. I'm also a granny of four. and financial burden. You don't plan. You don't know that death will knock at your door unplanned. And where will you get the money from if there is no insurance cover? Whereas with a baby, at least you can plan. You know it's going to take about 9 months. Mm. But with death, it's sudden. It's terrible, really.
Do we make an appointment with our families and start a conversation and say, you know what, it is time to invite you to have a conversation in the event of a passing? And here I'm talking about our grandparents, I'm talking about our parents, God forbid a child.
I think the best way to start this courageous conversation is by discussing a life file. I've actually brought you one.
Mm-hmm.
A life file is a file where you keep all your important personal documentation. There are 42 items that will be called for when you pass. And if you are not there to tell your family where it is, where will they start looking? In the basement, in the drawer, in the cupboards, in the car, in the boot? Where do they find all these things? The index is on my website. So it's like your last will and testament, copies of your ID, your marriage certificate, your divorce decree, your tax number, your policies, even your TV license will be called for. And you have to update this once a year because life happens. And then there is also space for my funeral wishes. It makes it so much easier when you had this discussion with your loved one and you know what they would want. Then you don't get, you know, family having arguments, because all the masks are off when somebody dies. But it's very important to inform the listeners that you cannot put in your will whether you want to be buried or cremated. I mean, you can, but I wouldn't advise that, because nobody knows what in the will. The will is not a secret document, mm-hmm. but we tend to keep it very close to our hearts. And then maybe this family has decided, let's do a cremation for mom. And then when, by the time the will is read, it says, please do not cremate me. I want to be buried. Now what do you do?
Mm.
Now you're going to live with that forever. You actually went against her wishes.
Mm.
But the life file is the correct place to record something like that. Definitely not in a will.
Not in a will. What's the difference? Why do we bury people and why do we cremate people?
It's a very personal choice. People sometimes ask me, what would you suggest? I can't make that choice for you.
Mm.
You know, with a burial, there's a trend nowadays where we do the burial first, we go to the cemetery first, we do the interment, and then after that we have a memorial service. So I quite like that idea, because there are three benefits. The worst is over. You don't sit in the church and you know, within an hour or so, I'm going to be standing next to an open grave. And that sound of the soil on the coffin, it's very disturbing. And you know this is coming and you can't bypass it. So if you change it around, then that part is done. And you really do get a comfort message when you then go to a memorial. The other benefit is distance. There's no cortege. We have to stoot yin and weer from the east to the west. And you are already at the church or the venue for the refreshments. So if you go to the traditional way, then you lose a lot of people. After the cemetery, they don't come back for that mingling afterwards, the after tears.
Mm.
So cremation, many people, and it's worldwide, they opt for memorial service where a private cremation is done, not attended by the family. That's what most people choose. So you can have a traditional cremation where the coffin goes to church and then you have a little ceremony at the end where people can pay their last respects and the family can see or the attendees can see the hearse leaving, and that will almost give you that open grave situation to bring closure. Or you can just have the memorial service at a venue of your choice, whether it's a restaurant, a country club, or you can do the cremation first and then have the ashes present at a memorial service.
Because this is part of a series, I have to talk about this. I mean, part of our grieving process, which is in one of our podcasts, will also be about losing a child. Uchemark, what do you do as the undertaker, as someone who escorts someone from life into the afterlife. What happens if a baby dies in hospital?
Babies are so close to my heart. Ilana, my non-profit company is the Voice of the Unborn Baby. And there's a huge difference about how this is handled in hospitals because of the viability of life definition. So if a baby is miscarried, if a fetus is miscarried at 25 weeks and 6 days, it used to be medical waste. You had no choice to elect to bury. One day later, 26 weeks, you have to bury or have a cremation. And that is so unfair. So I tackled that. It was a David and Goliath court case. I went through the High Court. It took me 7 years. I went through the Constitutional Court. At least now there's case law that says there's nothing in the law that prohibits you from having a choice to elect to bury if you so wish.
So I can, if God forbid my baby is 26 weeks and younger, I can bury?
26 weeks and older, you have to bury or cremate, register the death. Under 26 weeks, you now have a choice.
Okay,
you've always had the choice, but the law was misinterpreted. And it took this court case to bring this about.
Thank you for the court case.
It was just...
Thank you.
You know, it's one of those things, somebody said somebody must do something about it. And then I realized I'm somebody. You have to stand up for what you believe in. If things are not right, you have to fix it. No matter what. So it will help so many people going forward who have to still suffer this unbearable loss. And it's the most unrecognized loss in our society is losing a baby. Because people, you know, all these cliches, you're still young, you can so easily fall pregnant again, or at least you didn't know the baby. You know, the moment you start minimizing and it's, when I speak on the radio about this, people phone in, especially the live programs, and they say, you take me back 28 years, and they start crying because they never had the opportunity to say goodbye. And it's all about validation. The life in my tummy existed.
Yeah.
It's not an organ. So, to answer your question, one of the things I've learned in my 26 years in this industry, in the beginning, it was so difficult to go to a maternity ward when a baby had died. I would walk in with my carry cot and the mother would sit and she would cling to this baby. And there's not always opportunity where they are afforded the time to hold and to look and to take photos and to take prints, hand and feet prints. And then you stand there and the mother doesn't want to give you the baby. She wants to hold the baby. So I've learned in my experience to put my carry cot on the bed and I would start speaking to the father and ask the name the baby. You know, it's not a body, it's not a corpse, it's a little baby who's got a name. And then I would ask the father to please, when they are ready, please put Johnny or Anna in my bed and I will take good care of him or her. I learned that. They give the baby to me. I don't take the baby away. And I've also had a big issue with my parents leaving the hospitals empty-handed. There's no hamper, there's... The whole boxes, I'm sure you've dealt with Nunky.
So it's interesting you say that. We had Nunky on one of our podcasts because of the Hope Boxes. So for those of you that have never heard of the Hope Boxes, if you go back in our archives on babybrunch.co.za in this podcast series, you'll find it. Unfortunately, Nunky had a bad experience and she turned it into something that could help other parents. And we called that podcast, I Only Held Him Once, I Only Dressed Him Once, rather. I Only Dressed Him Once was the podcast title, and Nunky turned it into experience where moms could leave the labor ward with some motivation. So it's a box filled with a mug and a candle and something sweet and a message of hope that you can read.
Yeah, there are practical tips that I could give, you know, instead of a bunch of flowers. I know everybody loves flowers, and the symbolics about flowers is also that flowers die. But you can do practical things like grocery shopping and don't ask what can I do, because they will always say they're okay.
Yeah. Or it's just work.
Take the kids to a movie or take the kids to school. do the practical things that will help that person to yeah, it's difficult. There's a book, When Hello Means Goodbye, which I could really recommend for somebody who suffered pregnancy loss.
What does the book talk about?
It talks about the contradicting emotions. Like you say with Nunky, the minute you see your baby for the first time is when you have to say goodbye.
Mm.
And we also do the little burial pouches. We have volunteers who knit or crochet, and they make like little envelopes where we dress the little ones in, and they get buried in that. There's also people donating wedding gowns to make burial gowns for little babies.
If God forbid a baby dies and the hospital, you've said your goodbyes and the baby, are you allowed to ask to see the baby again?
Yes, I would really recommend that. The thing is, you are at the mercy of the hospital personnel. Sometimes I have personally experienced where a baby had died and they come with the red bag and they want to put the baby in the red bag, into the red bucket for incineration. I've seen that. And then you start, and I mean, you've got the parents there, and then you have to almost fight for the rights of the parents to have a dignified send-off so that they have something. There's no memories. A funeral is the only memory that they will have, besides maybe a hand and footprint or a lock of hair. There's no others. There's no pictures. So there's a foundation, Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep. Have you heard about them? It's also a group of volunteers who come in and they don't charge for this. And they take professional portrait photographs of the baby, the mother and the father and the baby, the siblings. It's beautifully done. And then it's your choice if you want to look at it. You don't get the hard copy. And it's all black and white. And then you can download the link. And whenever you're ready, you can have a look at it.
In our other podcast, we'll talk about practical preparations of saying goodbye. You know, what one could do in order to support someone who's going through this kind of trauma. But in your experience, when you have dealt with so many families over these wonder years, you know, when there's a loved one that we need to say goodbye to, and it's an adult, it's an oma, it's an opa, what's the easiest way? How do we deal with it with our children?
That's a very good question. Nowadays, granny goes in an ambulance to ICU, maybe on a ventilator. Children are not allowed. So what happens? Granny went in the ambulance. Granny never came back. So, and then people tend to sometimes keep children away from funerals because they don't want to upset them. But how will children ever learn about death? A pet is a very good example where you right. lose a little doggy, and we have a funeral and we bury the doggy. So children grow up with a replacement theory. You know, if they break into our house and they steal the TV, what happens?
We replace it.
We replace it with a bigger, better TV. This is the replacement theory. So now daddy dies. Mommy, are you going to find us a new daddy?
Mm.
When do we get a new daddy? Because children are not exposed to the process like they used to.
At some stage, we have to talk about practical preparations. Person, God forbid, passes, and now we need to plan. Where does one start?
You start with a life file, and you make sure you have a will.
Right.
Yeah. And then, yeah, when we collect 24/7, we are on standby. Then there's something very important that sometimes is overlooked, and that's organ donation.
Wow.
You know,
okay.
I might be registered as an organ donor, which I am, but if my family is not aware of it, there are cut-off times. So like the eye bank in Pretoria, there's a huge waiting list for corneas. And now so many people die with their corneas still intact. Corneas, heart valves, it's about 6 hours. From the moment of death, that things must happen in order to donate. And then bone tissue can still be donated up to about 5 days after death with consent of the family. So it's very important to inform your family about these kind of wishes. you know, that you want to be an organ donor, then something also very important is a living will. I know many of the retirement homes, if you are admitted, they insist on having a living will, where you yourself say, please do not keep me alive on machines.
Right.
I don't want a pacemaker. I don't want you to put me on a ventilator. Just let me just be pain-free and keep me comfortable. So another important thing is a power of attorney. If I have a power of attorney over my father's affairs and my father gets diagnosed with Alzheimer's, that power of attorney is null and void because he is not in a position to revoke it. And people, they don't know these things. They think, oh, with power of attorney is in place, I can still continue to do all the affairs. It's not so. It's difficult. Yeah, living will, power of attorney. Then people don't always know that there's something like a death claim that can be submitted at the UIF. If you were a contributor in the last 6 months before death, then your family can put in a claim. I have clients who get back 40,000 rand, a death claim at the unemployment insurance fund. But there's time limits. You have to claim within. It used to be 6 months. I'm not sure if they'll change the law now to 18 months. So you must act. But people don't know these things.
Is there a difference between natural and unnatural deaths? And what do we do in a case like that?
Yeah, there's a very big difference in the processes. So let's start by a natural death. It's normally illness related, heart problems or cancer, stroke. There are three exceptions. The one is epilepsy, if you suffer from epilepsy and you die during an episode. The other one is asthma. If you die during an asthma attack, you are suffocating. It could be regarded as unnatural. And then also an anesthetic death. If you die during an operation, it's unnatural. And they've brought in a new one, the procedure-related death. If you went for an angiogram or replacement of heart valves and something went wrong, they don't specify the number of days. It could be regarded as unnatural. So in the case of an unnatural death, which is your accident, suicide, drowning, poisoning, cot death, then an inquest has to be opened. There must be a police case. The body must go to forensic pathology services. A post-mortem will be done and the family must, or not necessarily the family, but somebody must identify. I always tell my clients, please get somebody who is au fait with maybe nursing or the police to do that for you. It's not the place to say your goodbyes.
I know that this is not a question for someone who is an undertaker, but has there been a situation where there was a play date and a child succumbed? And you had to take care of the burial?
Yes. I've had like a drowning in a koi pond, drowning in a swimming pool. Yeah, I've had cases where a parent accidentally drove over their child. It's terrible. It's very, very sad. Yeah.
If you had to give us advice to, this is tough. If you had to give us advice as to how to prevent those accidents so that we don't have to call you, what would it look like?
Sure. You never ever leave your children alone. It's a matter of just turning around to get a little sandwich or some plastic bell for maybe feeding your other child. And it's so quick where the little one just slips out the back door. Somebody left the gate open. Just be alert full time. Yeah. It's too late. When something happened, you can't fix it.
Does it feel better? Does it get better with time for moms who have lost? Do you I've got two moms in my circle, eh? Yeah.
If I talk about the death of a child, I don't believe you ever get to the acceptance phase. You know, the stages that they teach you, the bereavement process, the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, I have mighty respect for her, but a process to me feels like you have to sit back and wait for all these things, these emotions to happen. You know, where's the denial? Where's the anger? Where's the negotiation? Where's the depression? And you think it happens in that sequence, and it doesn't. It's like the waves of the sea. It's like this, up and down all the time, and then a freak wave. What is a fratsgolf?
Yeah.
A freak wave comes. Yeah. Maybe it's a piece of music. It could be a smell, a certain perfume, and it triggers you. So I believe you have to actively work through the grief in order to get better. But I do not believe that you ever get over the death of a child. You just learn to live with it.
The practical administration is one aspect. And I mean, you've prepared us so well for this. The life file, I think, is a great idea. I'm going to change my personal file to a life file. What is your encouragement to moms who have lost and to us as children who have lost our parents? What message do you have for us?
Death only ends the physical existence of someone, but that person will forever be a part of who you are. So if you think of commemoration, you know, have a memory corner, have a teddy bear made with your little one's clothes, have a blanket, a comfort blanket. Think of ways to commemorate their life. So there's so many things you can do in remembrance. Yeah.
Thank you for making it feel gentle and beautiful. And thank you for doing God's work. Like, I can't even imagine all the little angels that you had to escort.
Oh, thank you, Ilana. I don't want to do anything else.
Yeah.
This is my calling.
I know that. For this and more stories, we are recording this as part of a series, as we mentioned, and I think Sonia did a really great job in explaining to us what actually happens. Sonia Smit, funerals.co.za. Thank you so much.
This podcast was supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. Epimax Baby and Junior is dermatologist approved, free of artificial colorants and fragrances, and is safe to use from birth. Touch, nourish, love your child's skin with Epimax Baby and Junior. Available from leading pharmacies and retail stores.
The Curaprox teething ring with integrated training toothbrush helps your child prepare for the day they start brushing their teeth. The Curaprox teething ring also promotes the development of sensory and motor skills. Join the Curaprox movement. Let's celebrate a billion healthy smiles, which will result in a billion healthy bodies and minds, making oral health contagious.